It's Maggie and Perloff on the Infinity Sports Network.
Major, major implications for one of the league's biggest stars. That'd be LeBron James. Hey, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. It is a rematch between the Lakers and the Nuggets in round one of the NBA playoffs, Perloff. This was a team the Lakers took out in 2020 on the way to their title in the bubble. They took out the Nuggets. Nuggets returned the favor last year in the Western Conference Finals, swept out the Lakers on the way to their first title, and here they are meeting again. Now listen, I know that the Nuggets are the heavy favorites here. They're a 7-point favorite in game one, and that's obviously in their home floor Saturday night. But to say that LeBron has zero expectations going into this series, I think just sort of dismisses what LeBron, his whole career has been about. You know, he has a good team with Anthony Davis, who's healthy right now. These are some handpicked pieces that he put around, and a team that was built, rebuilt, and rebuilt to try to continue to win. So why shouldn't there be expectations just because you're going up against the defending champs? I mean, it's still LeBron and Anthony Davis. That duo is as good as it gets in the NBA.
It's not, because as good as it gets is Nikola Jokic and any other player. It's a better combo. They've lost 8 straight to them. They have done this brilliant, genius thing. LeBron planned this all along. I'm going to drop 8 straight, so I'm going to be this plucky underdog in this series, and no one's going to kill me if we lose. Honestly, how can you kill LeBron and AD when you're going against the best team in the league? That I understand what you're saying. He's 39, Maggie. I think you're ignoring that fact. Yes, prime LeBron and prime AD, they can go up against anybody. But you know, I'm sure you feel the same way about this series as I do and most people do. It'd be a huge upset to win this. So if that's the case, then how can you kill LeBron for losing?
Let's hear from LeBron James talking about the rematch with the Nuggets. He's downplaying everything.
I think you're putting a little bit too much more emphasis on it. This is our first round matchup, and I mean, we look forward to the postseason, but I haven't been like looking forward to the rematch. Just, the game is played, how it's being played, and this is the matchup, so we look forward to that challenge.
Okay, so if the Lakers get swept again or lose in 5 games or gentleman sweep, whatever you want to call it, then this is a massive wake-up call for LeBron, because this is probably the wake-up call of, oh, I'm not winning another one with the Lakers. I'm not winning another title with Anthony Davis, because he's healthy. He had a great season this year. And if this isn't good enough, and this is a good Laker team, if this isn't good enough and doesn't get you even close to the Nuggets, then you're just basically wasting years at the end, you know, not being a real title contender. So I think there's a lot of pressure here, maybe not just on LeBron, but I guess the Lakers in general, because if they get swept, why wouldn't he look somewhere else? Why wouldn't he try to go somewhere else? You know, why wouldn't he say, listen, I'm out of here. I'm going to go team up with Steph Curry. I'm going to go team up with somebody. I'm going to go with Luka, whatever it is, to try to get another title. Because sitting here is a fool's errand if no one thinks they have a shot.
I think the wake-up call should be opening up his wallet and looking at his driver's license and realizing he's 40 years old. A wake-up call is when you're 28 and you're Giannis or somebody and said, wait, I don't know if I can win another one here in Milwaukee. That's a wake-up call.
Right.
He's fully aware of how old he is, and they're the 7 seed. I mean, it's not like he is expecting to win a title. I know LeBron is always expecting to win a title, but I don't think he's thinking about it like that. I think he knows they're legit underdogs. I don't think he was like, well, this is my year. I don't think that thought ever crossed his mind.
Well, he played 71 games this year.
Right.
I think he's going to end up making like one of the all-NBA team, like the third team all-NBA. It's not like he's turning in these clunker seasons. Where
no, he's still good.
He's the fifth guy on the bench, and it's like, man, remember LeBron's glory days? Like, he's still one of the best players in the league.
But do you think if they lose to the Nuggets, he's going to look back and say, man, I thought this was a year? I think he's realistic enough to know they have a major matchup problem against the Nuggets. And it's unfortunate they get him in the first round, because it would have been nice to see him in the conference finals. But they don't know how to cover Jokic at all. Their best player offensively at stretches this year was D'Angelo Russell, who can't cover anybody on the Nuggets. They have all sorts of problems with this matchup. But LeBron knows that. He knows that they got swept last year. I don't think that he's saying to himself, gosh, we better win the title.
Yeah, I mean, this is why a lot of people floated the idea around. Now, it's, you know, totally flies in the face of competitive anything, but that the Lakers would have been better off losing to the Pelicans, playing what would have been now the Sacramento Kings, we know, to try to get in and be the 8th seed to play the Oklahoma City Thunder, as opposed to being seventh seed and playing the second seed at Denver Nuggets. We're talking about expectations for the Lakers and LeBron. So here's another question I have for you. Not to fast forward too much here, but let's say this goes the way that you and Vegas and most people believe this is going to go, with the Lakers having an early exit. What do you think is the more likely scenario? Do you think that LeBron would then look around and leave, or do you think he would look around and say, you got to trade Anthony Davis and we've got to try to do this in a different way? Like, LeBron's always kind of plotting something because he doesn't want to waste years of his career. I still think that he's chasing Michael Jordan, no matter what anyone says. You know, trying to add a fifth ring would be massive. What do you think is the more likely outcome?
I think he already made his decision. That I think he knew his championship window probably closes now or last year. I think he decided, I want to be in L.A. I want to make films. I want to play with my son. I don't think he's going to manipulate the situation to chase a ring. I think those other things, I mean, I hate to say it, I think those other things are more important. I think he stays with the Lakers.
Interesting.
Because also, too, it's really hard to find, with a salary cap and everything, to find that easy spot. He might have 1 or 2 years left. Remember he gave that interview where he said the end is near?
Yeah.
Like, you know, with Miami, it took him 2 years to get to the title. I don't think he thinks, oh, man, I could immediately go 1 year and get a title. That's not an easy situation. First of all, he's 40. He's expensive. Like, where is he going to go that guarantees a ring? I think he stays in L.A. and sort of shifts around his priorities.
Man, show bet. Disagree.
Okay.
I think LeBron's going to play for another team before all is said and done, because I think he looks at this and says, I think he wants to look back when his career is all said and done and be able to either say to himself or say to other people, you could never accuse me of ever taking a season off or ever mailing it in or ever not being all in on winning. I think that's the one thing, again, we always go back to this Michael Jordan thing, but that's the one thing where it's like Jordan was always focused, winning is the only thing. And I think LeBron also wants to show, and I think this is his nature, that winning is also his thing. And I could see him doing a year or two in Dallas. I could see him doing a year or two. Golden State feels a little bit like a stretch, but I can squint and I could see it. Jeez. I could see him doing a year or two somewhere else. I don't know about your 76ers, but like something else to just try to give it one more huge push. And I could absolutely see that. And
I don't know that those two teams you just mentioned are better spots than the Lakers. Like Dallas, he'd have to share the ball with Luka. I don't know how that happens. And then Golden State's getting even older than the Lakers. I think the Lakers have a better supporting cast. They have Anthony Davis. What does Golden State have? Steph?
Well, and again, but if they get swept by the Nuggets, if they lose in five to the Nuggets, I think it shows, and you've said it, that there's no path here. There's no path for LeBron to win another title if 2 years in a row you are not competitive against one of the league's best teams.
So the other thing about LeBron's legacy that I think hurts him is that he had to join Miami to win a title. I don't think he wants a bus passenger label here. I think one of the reasons that people put Jordan over LeBron is because Jordan did it with the Bulls, built the team around him, didn't join other stars. So I think he'd look weaker if he joined a super team and won a title. That's going to be kind of like Kevin Durant had the same problem by going to Golden State. That would be a problem legacy-wise. Jordan people would jump all over that.
Yeah, for some reason, I think LeBron's kind of gotten rid of that. He shed that because...
But why bring it back this year?
Well, I think the Cleveland title kind of put that a little bit to rest for people, right?
But if he joined a super team this year, it would come back very hard.
I don't know. He doesn't really get accused of being a bus rider, though. That really is what Barkley said about Durant. And I don't think LeBron gets that kind of smoke. You know, we could talk about it for sure, but I think he would just say, listen, what would you do? You know, and again, this is all predicated on whether or not the Lakers can be competitive against the Nuggets. If they cannot be competitive, I think LeBron's always been looking for greener pastures, always been looking for the next move. And even though he will be 40 and that is older, I think he still sees himself as a great player. He is a great player still, and would say, why wouldn't I still be trying to figure out my next move on the chessboard?
Because he's 40. I don't know.
Sometimes doesn't play like he's 40.
Settled. Yeah,
He's got the gray in his hair and a little bit in his beard, which is a little odd.
I just think that you look at the teams at the top. If he really wants to play and guarantee a title, he has to go to Boston or Denver or some gigantic team, and that will look bad.
Boston or Denver, but I think the other part too is, remember when Tom Brady went to Tampa?
Yeah,
right?
that is a totally different situation.
No, the only thing I'm going to bring up is that Tom Brady went there and made like $20 million. He was not being paid at the top of the market.
Right.
Brady never really was getting paid at the top of the market, but he was like the 15th or 16th highest paid quarterback, which is ridiculous, but he was willing to do that because he wanted to try to win another title. I could see LeBron doing the same thing. He can't take the veteran minimum, but he could take less.
Brady went to a 7-9 team, and you don't need athleticism to play quarterback like you do basketball. There's no way that LeBron's going to go to a 500 team and win a title. He's got to go to guarantee a title. He has to go to such a good team, because otherwise, like, how are you going to knock off the Nuggets? How are you going to knock off the Celtics unless you're on a sort of a super team?
Well, that's why I bring up Dallas. You know,
yeah, maybe Dallas. I see what you're saying, but even that doesn't that feel like a dicey situation to you? Dude, Dallas has added superstars before; it hasn't gone anywhere.
I feel like I could see Dallas with LeBron and Draymond, like, doing one of those kinds of things where they figure that out, and it's like a LeBron, Draymond, Luka, Kyrie. It's like crazy.
Oh my
it's
God.
Total insanity.
Denver would wipe the floor with that team. Don't you think? I mean, you would have to deal with a front line of Jokic, Porter, and Murray, and you have a bunch of old non-defensive players. Can you imagine? Who would you exploit first on that team defensively?
I'm just saying. Well, I mean, I was told Draymond Green was one of the greatest defenders of our generation, so I don't know.
Yeah, but he can't cover Jokic. So that, you know, height actually matters now in the playoffs. I just think that this sounds good in theory, but he will get killed if he tries to join a team that legitimately gives him a shot to win a title. And that, to me, the best two teams, he should go to Boston. If you're going to try and win, join Tatum and Brown and KP and all those guys and Drew Holiday. That's a good team. But they would probably criticize him.
Boston feels a little bit like a stretch.
And also, too, doesn't he have an old rivalry with them?
That's what I'm saying. I think Boston feels like a stretch, but any team really in the Western Conference, like, you know, who has a shot, I could see it. Why not? 855-212-4227. So that's our question here. Expectations for the Lakers against the Nuggets is one part. And then if the Nuggets sweep the Lakers, or gentlemen sweep the Lakers, winning 4-1, is LeBron leave? Again, this is the best shot you're throwing at the Nuggets, and if you don't even come close, what's he doing on this team? Or trade Anthony Davis, maybe try to do something else and retool and reload. But LeBron's not just going to sit back. I do not think that.
Should we be talking about, is LeBron going to retire too? Is that definitely off the table? Because now Bronny looks pretty far away from the NBA. I don't know. That last conference where he's like, I'm closer to the end than you guys might think. I don't know. What's he doing here at a certain point? You think he's just going to eke out these seasons? It's going to be hard to put together 82 games at that age.
You are welcome to weigh in on LeBron James, 855-212-4227. Want to watch the show? Come on in. YouTube.com/InfinitySportsNet, Twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork. You can always listen to us on SiriusXM, channel 158, and the absolutely free to download Odyssey app. It's a great app. I don't just say that because we work here. It really is good. I was talking about that with our guy yesterday who came to interview me for Inside Edition. How about that?
Whoa.
I know.
Look at that.
Pick up that name I just dropped.
Were you talking about the new Taylor Swift thing?
No. I have to imagine there's someone else they could have found for that. No, I was talking about Caitlin Clark in her introductory press conference in Indianapolis yesterday.
Right.
2 days ago.
How about that creep?
It was a awkward interaction for sure. Very cringe. Very cringe. That's Greg Doyle from the Indy Star, who basically had an awkward back and forth with Caitlin Clark about the heart hands that she makes towards the crowd, towards her family, actually. And he said something like, well, if you do that heart emoji to me, we're going to get along just fine, or the heart hands. Basically just really overstepping, trying to get way too familiar too quickly. And it came off real bad.
Yeah, it's funny.
He apologized.
When you said it, it didn't sound as bad. When he said it, it sounded really bad.
I wouldn't have done something like that at a press conference. That's not my style.
But actually, for some reason, if he had said it a little more normally, he might have gotten away with it. Like, you could have done something like that. Like, say, hey, what's the deal with the hand sign? Can you show it to us or something? But the way he said it was not good.
No. I mean, I think the other way you could ask it is, you know, you've become sort of synonymous with doing this to your family, you know, after you win a game or after you play. You know, is this something you're going to continue? Is this something that you, you know, I don't, why are we even talking about this?
Right. Thing? Isn't that annoying, though, that was one of the big, and I brought it up, so I apologize.
That's okay.
But I feel like that was the biggest thing that I heard out of the Caitlin Clark introductory press conference. One of the most historic college basketball player. And it's the main headline was, oh, well, this journalist made a creepy remark.
Yeah. Welcome to being a woman, Pat.
By the way,
sometimes this kind of thing happens where you're having your moment and then somebody comes and ruins it. Yeah.
Well, speaking of that heart sign, can we talk about our upcoming guest today?
Yes, we can.
Damar Hamlin is famous, does at Hart Sign all the time.
Yes, he does.
Can I ask him about it in a non-creepy way?
I don't think so. I think that Greg Doyle's basically shown you got to stay away from that.
Well, come on. We know I could say that to Damar Hamlin. It's way different, a male reporter saying that to Caitlin Clark than me saying, hey, can you give me the Hart Sign? He'd be like, oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, the male-female dynamic definitely played a role there.
Oh, you think? Yeah.
Without a doubt. So that was thorny. And I got a call. We got a call here. Inside Edition wanted to do the story, which was fun. So I was nestled right in between with the stories.
Yeah, what were your stories?
I was nestled in between like a juror on the Trump latest thing.
Oh.
Decided to leave. And one of the jurors on one of his, whatever he's in court for now, all the millions of things. But one of the jurors decided to leave. So I was nestled in between that story and a tree that fell. Crazy video in the back of somebody's house, and these two guys were like out there like drinking beer basically around a campfire, and they narrowly escaped. So that's pretty good.
That's a compelling story. That's tough to beat.
You know, those kind of shows now, I mean, they're doing some news, like they were doing the juror and stuff like that and the Caitlin Clark story, but I realize I don't really watch the Inside Edition or any of those shows anymore. It's kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos, sort of.
I thought it was more gossip, celebrity gossip.
It wasn't. It's a lot of user-generated social media stuff. Like, there was one story about a creepy guy who was, like, putting his phone, trying to, like, look up women's skirts with a phone. It's just, like, it's all just stuff that's coming from social media. Like, storm chasers and the people almost got hit by a tree and stuff like that.
There you go.
We've run out of original ideas, I think, at this point. So it's
I was
several years ago.
It's all right.
Not to overshoot you and Caitlin Clark, though. That's great.
Listen, it was a weird day. Weird day.
Yeah.
So the problem also was, if I can just take you behind the scenes for 1 second, I know we've got to go to break. So Inside Edition calls and they're like, we'd like somebody to comment on the Caitlin Clark story. And so they came to me and asked me, and I was happy to do it. But then I looked down and I realized that I was wearing a rally pimp t-shirt, which is really not the imagery that you want going out on Inside Edition talking about these complicated inner dynamics between men and women.
That's true.
So I had to change out of the rally pimp shirt. And the only other shirt that I had in the office was a Maggie and Perloff t-shirt. So I'm essentially I was like a walking billboard for the show. And I'm like the person who's wearing the shirt. Like on the show, it was just too much.
That much better than the rally. Is that the new Mets rally pimp?
Yeah. I ordered that right away.
What do you think about your friend, Annie Martino, claiming that he's better than everybody else?
I don't know. That's everybody. He didn't like pimp imagery. And so I tweeted him a picture of me in the shirt. And I was like, Andy, I hate to break it to you. I'm all in on the rally pimp.
This almost made it to Inside Edition.
Almost. So close. Welcome back to Maggie and Perloff. I love this time of year, Perloff, when the NFL draft is only single-digit days away, that we talk to college football analysts to sort of give us a little backdrop on what they think is going to work in the pros.
So wait, you prefer to hear people talk about players who they actually watch compared to all the NFL writers who did not watch football on Saturdays?
Exactly, and that's why we bring in Tom Fornelli, who's a college football writer and analyst for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. Also Cover 3 Pod, which we're such big fans of. Tom, thanks for the time. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so let's start off with the quarterbacks, as we usually do around here. If it was just based on college tape, how would you rank Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, and Bo Nix? In what order?
It really kind of depends. If you want to go on the full body of work or just last year, because it's like who these guys are now compared to who they were as freshmen, which is one of those things that is kind of difficult for me at times when I evaluate them. Because like you said, I've watched these kids throughout their entire career. So when I see them as a freshman, my thoughts on them at that time still kind of live in the back of my brain. So even as they get better, it's like, well, I still remember that one game, 4 years ago when he was terrible. But overall, I would say whether you look at last year or the career as a whole, Caleb Williams is number one either way. I think last year was, you could say it was his worst season in college because it was, but even then, when you watch him play, when you watch the tape, he just does things and makes plays and throws that simply nobody else in this class does. That's not to say he doesn't have his warts. He does hold on to the ball a little too long. He's a little loose with it. He can, you know, he fumbled a lot last year because of it. And that's stuff he needs to work on. But just as far as making wow plays, there's nobody in this class that can do what Caleb Williams does. At number two, I would have Drake May. I think that if you look at the ceiling, like last year, North Carolina was bad last year. Their offensive line was awful. They could, you know, they had one receiver. They didn't really have anybody else after that, and they couldn't pick up a blitz to save their lives. So for the most part, Drake May would catch the snap, and if he didn't get rid of it right away, he was under pressure nearly every time. And that kind of caused his accuracy to suffer. But if you go back 2 years ago, he was a much different-looking player. He was much smoother. I think that at times his accuracy does suffer, but he also, like Caleb Williams, he makes the kind of throws that, you know, you see an NFL quarterback make, like a Josh Allen make, a Patrick Mahomes make, that you really don't see a lot of college kids making. He can make those throws. So while I don't think he is somebody who I would want starting right away if I drafted him this year, I think he's got the highest ceiling of anybody in the class besides Caleb Williams. And then after that, I have to go Jaden Daniels, because to me, he just has the athletic ability, and he has grown so much as far as playing the position. I think he's gotten a lot better at going through his progressions, at understanding what defenses are trying to do before the snap and making those kind of plays. My concern with Jaden is he is still a little too eager to run at times, which I get because he's very fast. And if I had that kind of speed, I would want to show it off as much as possible too. But I do think that with his frame, the amount of contact he took in college would probably not be good for his long-term health in the NFL, because they hit a little different when you get to that level. But after that, honestly, I feel like everybody else is mostly the same. I think I understand why J.J. McCarthy is getting the kind of hype that he is getting, as why NFL teams like him, because he does do a lot of things that NFL coaches like. But I also think he is somebody that is probably still a year or two away from somebody you want starting for your NFL team.
Tom, I got to admit, I'm a little confused. Say you just took last year. It seems to me that Jaden Daniels obviously was a better college football player last year than Drake May. So when you say that Drake May can do the NFL things, that sort of sounds like a projection in my the way you were describing it. Or was he a better quarterback last year? Because it seemed Jaden Daniels was kind of perfect last season.
I think Jaden Daniels had an incredible season, and I think he grew a lot. But I also think that, like, when you if you watch the LSU tape, the important thing we have to remember is, first of all, Jaden Daniels is old, and I think that old for a college quarterback. And I think the one thing we often overlook is the most important thing for any quarterback or any football player or any athlete in any sport is repetition. The more you do it, the slower the sport becomes, the better you get at it. Jaden Daniels is a year younger than Trevor Lawrence. He was in the same recruiting class. So this is a situation where he has so many reps that it's, of course he got better last year. And also, when you look at what's around him, he had two first-round receivers he was throwing to, and if you watch the tape, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas were wide open. I don't mean NFL open or college open. I mean there was often nobody within 10 yards of them on some of these throws, so it wasn't like he was fitting balls into tight windows. Drake May did not really have that kind of, you know, that benefit. Devontae Walker is North Carolina's best receiver. He's going to get drafted, but he's not any but what anybody would consider a first-round pick. And also, the way that they were doing it, he wasn't getting as open as Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas were. So he had to fit balls into tighter windows. He had to make more throws from outside the pocket while scrambling. I just think arm strength, Drake May is really special. Like, there's talked about, you know, Joe Milton throwing the ball 80 yards, you know, at the combine and stuff in the drills. Drake May has that kind of arm strength too, and he actually uses it in games, and it's much more accurate with it overall than a guy like Joe Milton was. So I look at May, like, there's a lot of Justin Herbert-like comparisons, and I get that. Because build-wise, I think they're similar, but I think as far as style of play and where they are now, he reminds me more of Josh Allen in that the tools are there. The question is, can you refine them and can he improve upon them? And you look, like, Josh Allen in college had like a completion percentage of like 50%. His accuracy was awful. He gets to Buffalo. Brian Daboll works on some stuff with him and he becomes a much better passer. I think that's where Drake May is as a prospect. So that's why I say he has the much higher ceiling, because he's also like 2 or 3 years younger than Jaden Daniels. So there's a lot more projection left there than there is with Jaden.
Tom Fornelli joining us, college football writer and analyst for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. Tom, we have a segment on our show that we call the Daily Deion. We literally check in with Deion Sanders almost every single day. The latest is Shiloh and Shador, his two sons, out on Instagram saying, if you want to play for Colorado, DM the defense. If you're a defensive player, DM Shiloh. If you're an offensive player, DM Shador. A, is this going to work? B, what's your outlook for Colorado this season?
I think that on the surface it is funny because they're putting on their Instagram stories, hey, if you want to transfer here, DM us. But that is a lot. That is how a lot of this communication goes back and forth between players and the college personnel directors. They are on DMs on Twitter and Instagram, so that's nothing new. It's the fact that it's the quarterback and the cornerback who are the son of the coach who are doing it on social media that is weird, because it really kind of gives you the sense that the Sanders family as a whole are making all the decisions in that program. It's not just Deion; it's like his sons are a part of it too. So it is certainly a different approach, but it's also not completely out of line with what you typically see. So it's funny as far as how Colorado is going to work. You know, a lot of the players that Deion brought in last year, he said when he showed up, he's like, you know, there was the video that they put out that said he's bringing his own luggage, and it's Louis. And a lot of that Louis has entered the transfer portal again this year and is leaving. And my question is for Deion, like we saw, they got off to that great start last year. They surprised a lot of people with those wins against Nebraska and TCU. But it got really rough in conference play. They went 1-8 in the conference, and now they're joining a new league, which was their old league. But anyways, you look at the turnover on that roster, and my concern is that Deion's approach has been a very short-term approach. He's not trying to build that team as some sort of long-term project. It's not like, okay, this is where we're going to be in year 3, year 4, year 5. It's like, okay, what are we going to do next week? That really seems to be the long-term vision, is what's going on next week, next month, which tells me Deion doesn't plan on being there for the long haul. So I just, based on the roster turnover, like, I think Shadur is a talented player. I think Travis Hunter might be the best college football player in the country. He could be, depending on his position, he could be a top 5 pick in the draft next season. They have talent. It's just they don't have depth. And I don't know that they have the right approach to where I could look at that team and say they're going to win a lot of games. I expect that they'll be better this year, but I look at Colorado and I don't see a team that's going to be competing for much more than, going to a bowl game.
Is Shador Sanders the number one pick next year?
I doubt it. I think that he will be drafted. I think that he will go somewhere, but I just look at his ability-wise, he's talented. He's got a good arm, but he doesn't have a rocket arm. We talked about, holding on to the ball, something Caleb Williams does. I think Shadur is the poster child for a guy who holds on to the ball way too long in the pocket and tries to wait for somebody to get open. It works sometimes at the college level. You can't do that at the NFL level. You're going to have to be much quicker. But I will say the one thing that truly impresses me about Shadur as a quarterback is he takes care of the football. A lot of the times you see guys who are just kind of sitting around in the pocket waiting. They get hit, they fumble, turn it over. He rarely turned the ball over last year, whether it was through fumbles or interceptions. He makes smart decisions. The key is you have to get him to make those decisions quicker, because the game is going to start speeding up on him as he goes to the next level. And then there's also the fact that Deion has said he's only going to let his son play for a certain amount of teams. So it probably depends on who has the number one pick, whether he's going to be the number one pick next year.
Well, Deion, Shador, both in Dallas next year, I think that would sell some tickets. How about that combo?
That would certainly, yes. That would get ratings. That would sell tickets. That would get clicks on stories. I think everybody in the media would definitely be rooting for that angle. Yeah.
Tom Fornelli, CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. Tom, thanks so much for the perspective. We appreciate it. We'll catch up with you again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This is such a pipe dream that you keep putting out there into the universe. There is no shot that Deion and Shador are going to the Dallas Cowboys next year.
Why not?
This is like what people call like manifesting. I think you're manifesting this. This is you're hoping.
So say the Cowboys, say Dak gets hurt early on. They end up 5-12. They've definitely fired McCarthy. So I know you want them to hire Belichick, which makes a lot of sense. But they could easily get up in the top 5 to draft a quarterback. Why not?
But I don't think Deion's coaching in the NFL, no matter how well he and Jerry get along.
We all know how this works. If they get Shador, they have to hire Deion. It's like a local high school basketball league. Like, the dad has to coach. That's how the NFL should work.
Andrew Bogish is here. He's got headlines for us. Hello.
Good morning again. So he's going to be Rookie of the Year. He could have been Defensive Player of the Year. Is there a Best Teammate Award in the NBA for Victor Wembanyama? Because J.J. Redick let us know on Carmelo Anthony's podcast that last summer, Wemby was offered the chance to go on stage at a Drake concert in Austin. Apparently, athletes coming on stage are a recurring thing on that tour. Wemby asked if the teammates that would be with him at the show could come on stage as well. And when the Drake camp said no, Wemby said, then no thanks for me. How about that?
Look at that. What a team guy.
How about that?
Yeah.
If Sohan can't come up also on stage, then none of us are coming on stage.
You do know the Spurs were 22-60, right?
This happened before that. This makes it even better. Pre-first game, he was new, and he already was taking a leadership role of the Spurs.
So I watched a little of a video of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on stage at a Drake concert, and I think they were using this as a way for maybe Drake to, like, get a glass of water or take a little break or something, because they just had the camera on SGA just sitting there for an awkward amount of time.
With nothing happening.
Nothing happening. He's just sitting there on, like, a bench looking at the camera, kind of like, you know, a little Zoolander, like a little model glare, just like looking into the camera. I was like, oh, is he going to look away? What's happening here? Is Drake going to come out?
Well, after his recent commercial with Chet Holmgren, you'd think that he would maybe take the mic
take
and
the
start
mic
singing.
And sing. Good point.
What a pro wants.
That commercial was good the first time.
Yeah, so I'm sick of it now.
That's rough.
That's immediate. When you hear it, it's immediate clenching of the fist and anger. Shut up!
I feel like, Pat, does that happen to you multiple times a day?
Yes, because it's all the same commercials. Burger King has gotten back in my head. They've revamped. They've loaded back up. They have flanked all corners of my brain. Burger King is back. What are the other annoying commercials that we got?
That one. I mean, wait till we get to football season. Football, it's just the same ones. Ooh. The NFL season, it's the same ones over and over. Yes. Or the Dr. Pepper, Fansville. It's all the same.
Every Sunday, losing a parlay on the last leg. Crushing parlay, and then right after.
Mahomes or Mahato?
No, that one.
That one's good.
And then, come and get BK Broil Rap.
We already gave people a one-hit wonder bracket songs stuck in everybody's head for a month. We can't start doing commercial jingles.
I would counter that. The only funny writing basically in America right now is insurance commercials. That's the only place where all the comedy writers left The Simpsons, and that Progressive Dad and Geico, those are really funny. They probably annoy you, Pat, but don't you think that the Progressive Dad, Don't Be Like Your Parents?
LL Cool J
showing a weird guy how to do a selfie. That makes me laugh every time. Maybe I'm the target.
Love that stuff.
Yeah. Old people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just wait, Pat.
That's not how you do a selfie is one of my favorite lines. I still laugh.
We don't need a countdown.
When you're taking a selfie, you go 3, 2, we don't need a countdown.
Pat's anger just lives right below the surface.
How about when he's showing people how to not clutter and they throw out things and a guy has old siding from his house? He says, you never know when you're going to need this. And the Progressive guy goes, I do, never. I love that guy. You see, he's talking to me.
That needs to come to Long Island, I'll tell you that much.
The LL Cool J one is next level. That is one of the great commercials of all. Anything LL Cool J, I automatically get happy when I see that guy. I don't know if he's been canceled or anything, but
I don't think so.
He is so cool.
He better not. He is actually. It's actually a good influence on everybody, I feel like.
And I think if you've made it through, you've been famous this long, and got through the Me Too movement, and you haven't been canceled yet, you're as good as gold.
That's right.
You're a famous person. You got through that unscathed. Like, you must be the best. You must be an angel.
Yeah, you must be like a monk. I don't know how you would do that. LL Cool J, though, I think also his Q rating has stayed up very high. No one's ever like, I don't like LL Cool J. I've never heard that.
He hasn't put out an album in decades.
I have no. What's his last album? I have no idea.
Mama Said Knock You Out. But,
Yeah, right.
What else we got?
Actual NBA games tonight. Heat, Bulls, then Pelicans, Kings to decide the 8 seeds. Jimmy Butler and his knee officially out from Miami. Zion and his hamstring out for New Orleans. Here's Pel's head coach, Willie Green.
We all were disappointed and just kind of being there for Z, being supportive, encouraging him as he attacks his rehabilitation and his recovery from it.
And again, Zion not reevaluated for 2 weeks. So if New Orleans advances past tonight, they wouldn't have him either. The Celtics and Thunder waiting to see who they'll get in round one. Both those series start on Sunday. The corny jokes last weekend from new Kentucky coach Mark Pope did not work. Reed Shepard is leaving for the NBA draft. The NFL says there is insufficient evidence to punish Ravens receiver Zay Flowers over domestic violence allegations from January. Flowers was never charged. Police have suspended their investigation. Arizona State quarterback Jaden Rashada is in the transfer portal and has 4 years of eligibility left since he only played 3 games this past season. Georgia considered by some to be the frontrunner for his services. Now, he was a big-time high school recruit, was initially linked to Miami, then committed to Florida until a multi-million dollar NIL deal fell through, which left him going to Arizona State. So wherever he goes is Miami, Florida. That's 4 schools in like 18 months.
I know. Well, the Florida situation was crazy because he was like the crown jewel of the recruiting class.
Yeah.
And then it just all fell apart. It was shady circumstances. What was he promised to what, to who? And now Arizona State, as you mentioned it, 3 games, and now he's just back out there. And going to Georgia?
Well, is that
maybe going?
Isn't this a more normal path for a quarterback now? How many the top recruits? How many schools have they all been to? How many times is Del Rayola? We've already put him in 6 jerseys already. And I don't think he's played a game yet.
He hasn't. This seems like a lot with 3 games played in, and it's all been kind of rapid fire too.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't feel like that much to me.
I mean, he was linked to 2 places before he played anywhere,
right?
Then played at a 3rd school, and now we're looking at a 4th.
Well, Rayola's already flipped twice, and he hasn't played yet.
Well, I think it's interesting.
Twice, or once?
I thought it was Ohio State to Nebraska. No?
I think he was supposed to go to either. There was another school before Ohio State that
maybe
had
Georgia
him.
Then, too? Like,
yeah.
More, you know, earlier.
So Rayola and now Rashada, I think, is kind of different because usually when guys are hitting a lot of different schools, it's because they're like progressively working their way up. It's rare that you're kind of hovering around the same level, I guess, maybe a little Quinn Ewers. But like, I'm thinking about like a Michael Penix or someone like that, where like you're at Indiana and then you go to Washington.
No,
or,
but I assume the top recruits, while those guys are going up, someone's
like
got to come down.
A Dylan Gabriel. It's like you start at UCF and then you go to Oklahoma and now you're going to Oregon.
No, I think the big guys go down all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I think for every time there's a guy who, like Penix, who goes up, there's a 5 guys who go down. Because all those, doesn't Alabama have like four or five star quarterbacks there? What happens to them? We just don't know their name. Oh, by the way, Julian Sain, too. He's another guy who's already flipped multiple times and hasn't played it down.
Yeah.
DJ Lagway has flipped already. This is the way it is. NIL has made this very, very confusing.
Right. And also that's why also Rashada is unique, because the number was at $1.13 million. No one ever knew if that was real or not at Florida. And all of a sudden then wasn't going to get paid to him. So like he had a little extra attention on him and was supposed to be really good and then only played the 3 games and is now moving on again.
Yeah.
And wouldn't start at Georgia. He'd be Carson Beck's backup if he went there for a year.
He's not a 5-star, though, right? He's not like
a top 50 recruit, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so not like Arch
Manning. Not a guarantee. He's not a generational quarterback,
no.
Per se.
Speaking of Arizona, the NHL has approved the sale of the Coyotes to Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith. This is where it gets complicated. Technically, it's a new team that'll be in Salt Lake City, but it'll be comprised of all the Coyotes players and staff. The actual Coyote franchise is inactive. That's the NHL's word for now, as they try for another new arena deal in the Phoenix area. Guys, back to you.
Better luck just putting actual Coyotes on skates than whatever is going to end up happening here. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Mornings here. Infinity Sports Network, SiriusXM Channel 158, free Odyssey app, YouTube, Twitch, the whole deal. It was still the biggest story of the offseason so far, Perloff. Stephon Diggs traded away from the Buffalo Bills.
That's the biggest story of the offseason? That's bigger than Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta?
I think so.
Okay.
I would suggest yes. So this was the first time since that big blockbuster trade that Josh Allen publicly weighed in on the trade. So they were all in Buffalo yesterday. Brandon Bean was doing his pre-draft press conference. Josh Allen was there as well. And Josh Allen was asked about Diggs and what losing Diggs now will mean for his future.
Definitely hard to part ways with a guy that's been very instrumental in our success here over the last 4 years. And again, I can't thank him enough for when he came in and how hard he worked and what he taught me along the years. Obviously, I wish we can keep everybody. We've made a lot of changes this offseason, lost a lot of veteran leadership, Steph being one of them. I guess that's the nature of the business. And going into year 7 now, it's just kind of is what it is. You know, I don't get paid to make changes on the team. I get paid to be the best quarterback that I can be and try to lead the guys on this team. I think it's an opportunity for myself to grow as a leader and to bring along some of these young guys or new guys that we've brought into our team. And that's an opportunity, frankly, that I'm very excited about. You know, it's something that is going to be very challenging, but I'm very willing to do it.
So there you go. I mean, you can feel the changes going on in Buffalo, and this is going to really come back on Josh Allen because he already shoulders so much of the load. He already is one of those guys that Cam Newton calls, you know, a game changer, where you really can ask him to go out and basically win a game for you. It's not unfair to ask him to do that. How much can you possibly put on this dude's plate? I mean, you got rid of basically all the veteran leadership, a lot of it, and you got rid of his best offensive weapon. I mean, the guy sometimes plays superhuman, but he's not. I mean, this is a lot for him to now take on.
Yeah, I mean, you have the model in Kansas City where Patrick Mahomes lost Tyreek Hill and has a bunch of second to seventh round wide receivers.
Like Kelsey and Andy Reid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but Josh Allen, I think if you pay your guy $50 million, you think he can make these receivers. Honestly, I don't think it's going to be that hard. First of all, I think that it's going to encourage them to hand the ball off more, which you've been lobbying for 5 years.
I have.
So I just don't know. I'm back to where I've been many times. The wide receivers are a bit generic. I feel like Josh Allen, listen, he's going to throw a lot of passes, and somebody's going to step up and have 1,200 yards just as a function of the offense. I don't know who, but it's not like these guys can't catch the ball. Do you really think that this is going to gut him? I don't think so at all.
I think there's definitely going to be a transition period. And I do think that the Bills are going to have to come away with this draft with a wide receiver. So then you're asking to work in a wide receiver who's a rookie who's going to have to make a major contribution. Now, Dalton Kincaid as a tight end did that last year. Mm. And at the end of the year, he was catching huge passes for Josh Allen.
And Stephon Diggs was not
and
catching
Stephon
any
Diggs
passes.
Was dropping those passes. Okay.
Or not even really getting targeted anymore.
Yeah, but again, you're asking basically in a team that's still win now with the window open, you really are going to be asking a lot for whoever this wide receiver is. And I don't know if the Bills are going to try to trade up and try to get a Roma Dunze or try to, you know, really get aggressive here. Or honestly, if they end up trading back, if this really is one of the deepest wide receiver drafts that we've seen in a long time, then maybe you're trying to trade back, get some more assets, and maybe you're finding that guy in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, listen, look around the league, look at the great receivers. How many of them went in the second round? Well, more than went in the first round. I'll tell you that right now. I agree with what you said. It'd be nice to trade down and get two receivers. Give me Xavier Leggett and Ladd McConkey or some combo of something. But I think Josh Allen, here's the reality. If you're that good at quarterback, you can throw to anybody. That's just the way it is.
I know, but like usually you have someone.
Now they have Kincaid. He's pretty good.
Yeah, he is. But again, now you're asking him to, you know, is year two going to be just like it was in the second half of year one? You know, it doesn't always work like that. And, you know, Mahomes does have Kelsey. Like, we really can't downplay exactly how big that is.
Who did Aaron Rodgers have toward the end in the second MVP season at the end? He did not have a good receiver. Oh, Devontae. Did he have Devontae the last time? Yeah. Oh,
yes.
That's good.